Hello and welcome to Revolutions Per Minute here on KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill. Tonight, during the first hour of this show, we'll feature the African American Composers Initiative. They have concerts coming up next Saturday and Sunday in East Palo Alto. And later on tonight, we'll also remember pianist Herbert Henk, who died a few days ago. Let's begin with music by Joshua McGee, Variations on an African American Spiritual, from the album Where Freedom Rings, with the African American Composers Initiative.
Thank you.
That's music by Regina Harris Bayaki with pianist Deanne Tucker here on KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. Before that, we heard variations on an African-American spiritual by Joshua McGee. And these are recordings from the African American Composers Initiative. They have a concert coming up next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, in East Palo Alto. This recording is Where Freedom Rings, Compositions by Contemporary African American Composers. I'm Sarah Cahill, and I'm very happy to be joined right now by the two founders of the African American Composers Initiative. By the way, their website is aacinitiative.org. LaDoris Cordell and Josephine Gandolfi, and also writer and musicologist Jeannie Gale Poole, who I'll be talking with in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. LaDoris, I want to start with you. You were the first female African-American judge in Northern California and the first African-American Superior Court judge in Santa Clara County. And you wrote a book called Her Honor, My Life on the Bench. You're also a published artist. You have so many extraordinary accomplishments, too numerous to mention. Right now, we're going to talk about you as a pianist. And like most of us, you studied music without really hearing any Black composers for a long time. Is that right?
I think it's an understatement to say for a long time. And first, thank you so much for having us all here to talk about this music. I am one of those, I'm the middle of three sisters, and we all grew up playing the piano when we were little. And pretty much through high school, I hated practicing, and I also played the violin. But then everything stopped. So I go to college. And by the way, when I had my piano lessons when I was, say, starting with 5 or 6 years old till high school, I had an African-American piano teacher. Her name was Alice Tucker. She's not with us any longer, unfortunately. But that being said, I was never aware of any African-American composers, even with Alice. So everything is stopped for me as far as music, because I end up going to college, and then I go to law school at Stanford, and then it's practicing law, it's paying off law school debts and all of that. So there's no piano. I did grow up in a Black Baptist church back east growing up, and my sisters and I all, you know, sang together on the choir and that kind of thing. So it was not until about 2003. So if we get dates here, I finished law school in 1974. No piano from like 67 to 74. And then no piano really from 74 to 2003. And that's when I meet Julia Gandolfi. And I become a student of hers, returning to piano. And I think Jody and I, she gave me lessons for maybe, could have been 3-4 years. And then at one point, I'm sitting there, and she's had me really improve my skills playing Mozart and Beethoven and, you know, all of the quote unquote, the great composers. And I turned to her one day, I said, are there any Black composers? And Jody kind of looked at me and was like, well, maybe. Okay, I have to look into that. And that's really where this journey started for me and for Jody. So up until that time, no, never heard of any. And, you know, this with the African American Composer Initiative that Jody and Deanne and I co-founded, we have played the music of more than 40 African American composers. So I've come a long way, Sarah, from 2003, well, actually from 19, from when I was 5, to at least to today, learning about all these composers. And it's just blowing me away, just completely blowing me away to learn about all these. One of them was Zenobia Palperi, and that's Jeannie's, you know, she's not Jeannie's discovery, but she kind of is, because Jeannie brought her to the world, to all of us.
Yeah, and made her scores available, and wrote a book about her, and we'll be talking about that later. I mean, it's just really extraordinary. And you think about 2003 when, you know, most of us knew so little about many of these composers, all the scores that have been published, all the recordings that have been made. I mean, there should be many, many more, but there is a beginning. And I think the African American Composers Initiative has been really fundamental to all that work, because I've learned, you know, I've learned so many composers from the work that you've done and the recordings that you've made, and just, it's really, really incredible.
Yeah, I just want to bring one thing up, is that why is it that we haven't heard about any of these musicians? Why is it that Jody, for example, has had the finest education in music anybody could get? Why? And the answer, clearly for me, it is the institutional racism in the whole music field, particularly starting with classical, but everywhere. So when we mention Black composers, African-American composers, people immediately think, oh, okay, jazz and the blues and maybe some popular music. And the answer is, yeah, yeah. And that's where everything else comes in, which is the music we perform, arias, opera, classical music, art song. Everything is there and has always been there, but there's been kind of like literally, and I don't want to pun intended, a blackout. Yeah. It's like, nope, you know, you don't know about these people. And last thing, I can't imagine what it must have been like for these composers to compose this beautiful music, and then they couldn't get the music out and heard.
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating part. If you're a composer, you want people to hear the music. You want to share the joy. And these, for so many of them, it never happened. It happened on a limited basis, but they just kind of disappeared. Well, we're bringing them back.
Yeah.
We have brought them back.
It's so true when you read, when you read Florence Price's letter to Serge Koussevitzky, and she says, you know, I am a Black woman, but just listen to the music and look at my score and judge it on that value, and not as you would any score.
It's sad to me, but and the other part of it is that we are able, because of the work, and most of the work is done by Jody. Quite frankly, she has found this music and has really done more than anyone in this country has done to bring out the music of all these composers. So from me, it's like, it's now a celebration. It's a celebration. When we have these concerts only once a year, it's a celebration, and we're just doing for these composers what they wanted done.
Yeah.
And finally, it's happening.
Yeah. And it's this Saturday and Sunday in East Palo Alto, the African American Composers Initiative. Yeah.
Right.
Jody, I want to bring you into the conversation and ask you what you remember about that moment when LaDora said, are there any Black composers, and how you did research after that, and how you put these concerts together.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. And thanks for having us on your program once again.
Of course.
Also, thank you for joining in and learning yourself and performing some of the music that, you know, that we've tried to share with others. I think that's just really fantastic. So I thank you.
Thank you.
So that moment, it was, you know, how we have these moments in our past that are just kind of frozen in time. I just remember looking at LaDoris and when she asked me that question and realizing that I had no answer, but I wasn't going to say no. I wasn't going to say, no, there is no music by African-American composers in the classical idiom. I just said, I'm going to look into this. And by chance, actually, shortly before that, a friend of mine had sent me a volume of music by William Grant Still. He had been to a convention and had picked it up and said, gee, you know, I heard some wonderful organ music. You might be interested in this. So I remembered that. I hadn't looked at it yet. And I looked at it and I realized, oh, my goodness, this is fantastic music. So I started to, you know, learn about William Grant Still. I got in touch with his publishing company, which is run by his daughter, Judith. I ordered more. I started learning it. I had LaDoris learn it, had other students learn it. And that was just the first step. I thought, well, if there's this, there's got to be a lot more. And then I looked into music by Nathaniel Dett And then pretty soon after that, you know, Margaret Bonds, Florence Price, Betty Jackson King. But I, in doing the research, I realized that there had been a few wonderful scholars who had been doing work. I hadn't heard about it, but one of those was Helen Walker Hill, and she is the wife of was the wife of George Walker, the great pianist and composer, and the mother of Gregory Walker, another great composer. She had become interested in music by African-American women composers and had amassed a great collection of music and had scores and letters and things. And she donated her collection to the Center for Black Music Research in Chicago. And then she wrote this wonderful book called From Spirituals to Symphonies, in which she interviewed every living African-American woman composer she could, and wrote fantastic biographies, really detailed. She has one in there of Regina Baiocchi, Valerie Capers. So we got to I got to know a lot of these composers through her writing. And then I eventually thought, well, to find this music, I've got to go look at these scores. So I did go to Center for Black Music Research in Chicago, and I looked up her collection and other scores that were there. And I was just amazed at what I found. And as I said, I got to know, you know, those two composers and others through that collection. You know, Dolores White was one, Betty Jackson King another, Lena McLin, and some of these people I did get to know personally. And Jeannie Poole is another one that I got to know through that visit to Center for Black Music Research, because Zenobia Powell Perry's music was there. And I was told in order to access that music, I'd have to, you know, contact the person who was in charge of her musical estate. Oh. And I did that right away. And Jeannie was fantastic. She actually sent me all of Zenobia Powell Perry's music on a disc, on several discs. Yeah. And then, you know, so really, she's been part of our group really from year one. And as you'll hear later, I mean, we've had wonderful interactions, not only with her providing scores, but, you know, then we ended up doing recording projects together. We did a production in the city of Zenobia Powell Perry's opera, Tawawa House, with our AACI musicians and musicians from, or actors actually, from African-American Acting Company in Modesto. And we've continued, you know, to have an ongoing relationship. You know, we'll get into it later, but she's helped us to not only record, but publish music. So anyway, so the question that you asked, you know, how was my journey after that question? It just really changed my life. You know, I have had such a fantastic time, not only, you know, just finding this music, learning to play it, sharing it with my students and with all my musical colleagues in performance, and then, you know, founding this organization, which thanks to LaDoris brought us to East Palo Alto, where we, you know, performed this music for just a wonderful community. Mm. In fact, I just can't wait to see our community this weekend. We have so many people who come back year after year, and they're on this journey with us. You know, so that's one of the great things about it. You know, it's we're not doing this alone. We're, you know, bringing others with us. And everybody is, you know, at first, I think people are a little skeptical until they hear the first piece, you know, and then think, wow, where have we been? Yeah. You know, and yeah. So, you know, the journey just goes on and on. I mean, I just am finding new things to study and to perform all the time. And beyond that, where you, through the music, you learn the stories of these composers. And yeah. They are all fascinating. You know, this, like the name of our concert this year is We Are a Family, Generations of Music by African-American Composers. And that word family, I mean, there are families of musicians. I mean, not only, you know, composers having musician, composer, performer children, but the families joining in on helping with preserving the music and publishing it. And so we've got, you know, that's true for, I mean, practically every one of the composers that's on our program. It's a family, effort. So yeah. Anyway, that's maybe enough.
Yeah, and again, we should mention the website is aacinitiative.org. Right. And yeah. There's information there about the concerts this weekend mm-hmm. in East Palo Alto. And also, they're both in the afternoon, right?
Yes, 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday. And also lots of great videos and information and backstory and biographies and just lots of great information about recordings and It's mm-hmm. just, it's a wonderful website. Let's listen to a little bit of Zenobia Powell Perry before bringing Jeannie Poole into the conversation. And Jody, this is you at the piano, Jody Gandolfi, playing music by Zenobia Powell Perry. And then we'll come back and talk. Three short works by Zenobia Powell Perry from the album Piano Works. Zenobia Powell Perry, a recording from the African American composers, Cambria CD, but the African American Composers Initiative. You're listening to KALW, San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm here with Lidoris Cordell, Jody Gandolfi, and Jeannie Poole. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. Jeannie, you're a writer, composer, radio host, producer, and you've done tremendous work on women in music. Right now, I want to ask you about your biography of the composer Zenobia Powell Perry, fascinating composer born in Boley, Oklahoma, Creek Indian and African-American, and your book's title includes Race and Gender in the 20th Century in the title. Tell me how you first encountered Zenobia Powell Perry and decided to write a book about her.
Well, I met her daughter. Thank you very much, Sarah, having us on, and your support of AACI. It's really important. And I met her daughter backstage in New York City at the New York Philharmonic. And she recognized my name and said, I know you're an advocate for women composers. My mother is a composer. And I asked her about her mother. And it turns out that Zenobia lived 15 miles from my parents and had been teaching at Central State University while I was going to high school, very close, nearby, and having grown up in that community, I was stunned that I didn't know her. And so I immediately started talking to her, and we became dear friends. And her daughter and I have been friends all these years. So I knew Zenobia about 25 years and presented her music in New York City and then around the world while she was alive. And when she died, I I made a plan with her daughter to start promoting the music. The last year she was alive, I worked on the biography and had wonderful help from Zenobia to write the book.
Yeah. What condition, so were the scores in manuscript?
Right, and the beautiful manuscript. Mm-hmm. Her musical handwriting is just as clear as can possibly be. It's really beautiful. And I put all of the original scores at the Center for Black Music Research and started producing editions, computer music notation, and started creating performances of the music. And so it's available, lots of it. Every year I put out new pieces. I'm just now putting out two of her big scores for Symphonic Wind Band and her brass quartet. And it's an ongoing process. I've been helped by lots of people who have joined the bandwagon, a professor at Indiana University. Terry Dean has done these two new editions of the Wind Symphony pieces. So it's an ongoing process.
What was it about her music? I mean, there's a lot, of course, in her life that would be fascinating for a book. But what was it about her? I mean, you're a composer yourself. When you saw the scores and you heard the music, and what was it that drew you in so much that you decided to write a book about her and devote so much of your own life to her, to preserving and having her music performed?
Well, she was absolutely a wonderful woman, just delightful, lots of fun, and very serious. What I loved so much about her story is that she persevered. She had every obstacle you can imagine put in her way, and people telling her, well, you should just play organ at the church and forget concert life. Don't bother composing anything. Just maybe make some arrangements for the school choir, mm-hmm. things like this. She had so many obstacles, and she sought for 25 years to find a teacher of composition who would take her seriously as a composer. And she found Darius Milhaud, of all people, and at the University of Wyoming.
Wow.
And he was on the faculty for a brief time after he came to the United States. And she was improvising in a student center for some dancers, and he heard her play the piano, and then she went to an interview with him, not knowing that he had been in the room. And he said to her, well, you're already a composer. I heard you at the piano. Mm-hmm. What can I do for you? And she said, well, I really need to learn the craft. I need to learn how to write it down and to orchestrate. And he said, fine. And mm-hmm. so she went to Aspen Music Festival for 9 years in a row, where he was teaching on the faculty, and studied with him and had a long-term relationship. And he was very encouraging and supportive of her. But it took her a long time. She was in her 40s before she found somebody who would teach her the nuts and bolts of composing and orchestrating.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? Sometimes it just takes one person. I mean, it just takes one person. Yeah.
So I love that about her story, because I worked hard to find a composition teacher who would take me seriously. So I understood all of that. I heard all the third grade, I announced after an orchestra concert that I was going to be a composer and write for orchestra. And the teachers at the elementary school laughed and said, oh, ho, ho, girls don't write for orchestra. And I made up my mind in third grade that at some point I would write for symphony orchestra, just to show them that they were wrong about me and that they had underestimated what my future would be.
I hope
so
you sent them
lots
that.
Lots of people have that experience. Mm-hmm. Women and minorities have that experience. People who come from poverty and compromised circumstances have that trouble. Starting late. But it's not impossible to start late.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about Towawa House.
Well, that's a really long story, but the short version of it is she wrote an opera based on the life in the 19th century in Wilberforce, Ohio, where in Towawa House was a resort hotel before the Civil War, where white slave owners could bring their black mistresses who were their slaves and their mixed race children for holiday. And as the war approached, they left their mixed race children there, and it was a perfect place to, because no one knew who was slave and who was free, who was a runaway, who was black or white. And it became an important stop on the Underground Railroad. And she wrote this opera because she thought that people in Wilberforce, Ohio need to know their own history, because people knew about Towawa Springs and they just thought it was this white resort hotel. Didn't understand its role in history. And it, after the Civil War, it became the first black-owned and managed university in the United States.
Wow. Wow.
So that's the story. Yeah. She had trouble. 1985, when she did this, the faculty at her university didn't like it because it told a positive story of African-Americans working with Quakers and whites in the community who were a part of the Underground Railroad. And her faculty members said, well, we don't want to tell a positive story about blacks and whites getting together and making change. We don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of nationalism on the faculty there, and they didn't like the story. And so they blocked her the opening night of her performance. They called a concert of orchestral music at the college and took all of her musicians away. So she had to frantically reorchestrate the piece for some community people who were available to perform, because all the student musicians had been yanked out of the orchestra on 2 days' notice or something.
That's crazy.
So they tried to sabotage the performance.
Yeah.
You know, you find similar stories. For example, William Grant Still, his music was taken. Suddenly things just disappeared when he was getting ready to conduct a piece. I am in awe of the resilience of these composers,
right,
who people, they really can't imagine how awful it was trying to just get over these barriers. And it just blows my mind. It's only because of the melanin in our skin. It's just crazy. It's totally insane.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. And it's so infected the whole, music establishment. So that's why what we're doing now, what Jeannie's doing now, Jody, is so important. Now, the young composers coming along stand on the shoulders of all of those folks who went through hell just to bring beautiful music to the world.
Yeah. LaDoris, I want to ask you, it's a difficult question, but we're at a time when DEI initiatives are being canceled and people say, it should be merit-based, it shouldn't be based on race and gender. And what would you answer those kinds of decisions?
And it's interesting you ask that, because I was thinking about that as Jeannie was talking, as Jody was talking about how today talking about this would, people would say, we don't want to hear this. This is today, in 2024. So it's already happening with respect to the, 47 now blocking, ordering DEI to go away. And there are people who will say, we shouldn't have to worry about you know, doing something to increase diversity and bring inclusion. And if you just think about the words are wonderful words. Diversity, inclusion, equity, yeah. They're wonderful words that are now being interpreted by some as somehow being negative and awful and wrong. Just craziness, in my view. So there are those who say, if you do DEI, you know, that's reverse discrimination. And you're saying that, you know, people are who are white are less than. And the answer to that is clearly you do not even understand what DEI is. And there are reactionaries who say the initials DEI stand for didn't earn it. That's how the reactionaries are looking at this. And not understanding history, not understanding that how many doors have been closed and continue to be closed, and why an extra effort needs to be asserted to bring the inclusion. So these are beautiful words that have now been twisted by people who don't want to understand, or who do understand and just feel somehow or other that it threatens their very existence, which is very sad. So, you know, what has to happen, quite frankly, Sarah, is a respectful conversation with people who talk about DEI negatively, a respectful conversation, which is very hard to have today, very hard. People are just kind of divided. But if there is a conversation, I think people will begin to come to understand the beauty of taking these efforts to include women, to include people of color, to include LGBT. You know, it's like the more we are combined together, the better we do. But there are some people who don't get it or don't want to get it.
Yes.
And one last thing, just that leadership right now in this country is promoting this idea that DEI is some awful, bad, racist thing. And it's very, very sad. And it is leadership, really, that sets the tone. So all of us who care about these issues, we have to stay strong. We have to, continue in the struggle and don't get discouraged and don't get passive. What we don't need is that right now. We need to do the things, Sarah, that you're doing, like right now, airing this program and talking about these issues.
Yeah, thank you. So important. And people should really check out the concerts this weekend. And I also love that, I mean, speaking of inclusion, that many of us think when we hear the word composer, we think, oh, that's someone who writes music down on the page. But you embrace these genres, jazz and spirituals, and you embrace this whole world of music, which is part of the African-American tradition in this country and such a vital part of American music. And that's also very important.
If I could just add something about that. The program does have a lot of music that's based on spirituals and in a big variety of settings and styles and instrumentations. And I like what you just said, because those traditions were just orally handed down. And so many of the composers, in fact, composers on this program said they heard that music from their grandparents. And it deeply affected them and their ideas about their, you know, who they wanted to be as composers and how they wrote. And then these settings of these spirituals, I mean, there are some on the program for instruments by Dolores White. They are magnificent pieces of music. And she actually wrote them to be played by herself and her husband, who was a fantastic cellist. He was the first Black cellist to be hired by a major symphony orchestra. And I heard recordings of them playing together, and they're absolutely magnificent. But it's, you know, it is very inspirational. There are so many stories behind, you know, every one of these pieces.
Yeah. Well, Doris, I want to thank you for what you said about DEI and what's going on in this country. And it's just so important to say and to do the good work as you're doing. And the fact that you have, you know, these incredibly enthusiastic large audiences at your concerts, and you're changing people's lives, and you see generations coming up who were learning about this music, and just the list of the, you know, of the artists in this concert, Regina Baiocchi, Margaret Bonds, Valerie Capers, Jacqueline Hairston, Joshua McGee, Lena McLynn, Zenobia Perry, William Grant Still, and Dolores White. And it's just an incredible group of artists for this concert coming up. People can find out more at aacinitiative.org.
Yeah, Sarah, I hope at some point you can come and experience our concerts. Part of the experience is the audience. We have such a diverse audience, and they're enthusiastic, and they came to hear and to learn. And it's hard for me to describe it. You just have to experience it. So I'm hoping at some point you'll be able to come and experience it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. You were a criminal defense attorney in East Palo Alto, is that right? So is that your connection to the school where these concerts are presented?
So East Palo Alto is where I got my start. After I finished law school at Stanford, black woman, big afro, I couldn't get hired by these big law firms. So I ended up starting my own law practice right out of law school in East Palo Alto. And that community supported me. I was the first lawyer in private practice. East Palo Alto had no law offices. So that's where I got my start. My heart has always been in that community. In 1983, East Palo Alto went from becoming an unincorporated little piece of San Mateo County to becoming a city. And I had the privilege, by then I was on the bench, to swear in the first city council of East Palo Alto. So yes, that community is where my heart is. Beautiful, wonderful people. And Eastside is an amazing school. It is not a charter school. It is a private school. The students are, and the main first generation black and brown students who, and that school for more than 20 years now has a 100%, I'll repeat it, 100% graduation rate, and 100% of the students that graduate go on to four-year colleges and universities. So it's amazing, an amazing place. So, and that's where we hold our concerts, and I guess this is 14th year, and the Performing Arts Center is fabulous. There's not a bad seat in the house. Yes, that's where my heart is, and I love being there. And it's really nice when Jody comes over there. I mean, Jody's like, she's part of the school. I mean, they come in, everyone knows her, the administration, the principal. And Jody, you can speak more to it, but it's just become almost a second home.
Yeah. Oh, it is. Yeah, I love being there. And through the years, we've also incorporated the students of Eastside into our concerts. We've had their choir sing with us. They did some major works of Valerie Capers in the past. This year, we're having an Eastside graduate as a soloist and a wonderful singer. I just think the world of the school, and all of the arts there are really well supported. They have a wonderful art, photography, dance program, theater program, and music. Yeah. And it's a magnificent school.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
All of our musicians feel very welcome there. They all want to come back every year to be part of that. You know?
Will some of the composers be present at the concert?
Let me see. This year, unfortunately, Joshua McGee was going to come, but he was assigned jury duty. Can't make it. And we are actually doing music, I think, of five living composers, but they're not, none of them are able to travel, you know, to be to this one.
Has it, yeah, you and I had similar training as classical pianists, and has it sort of stretched you beyond your comfort zone when you do these concerts and there's some sort of free rein or, I mean, not everything is strictly notated, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it has stretched me. In fact, one of the pieces we're doing this time, which is a wonderful piece by Baiocchi called Can't See to Can't See. Mm-hmm. It's a spiritual, it's a phrase that refers to the enslaved working from pre-dawn to post-sunset. Can't see to can't see. And so the music I got was just, you know, the vocal parts and then, you know, aligned with the chord structure. And so I said to her, well, how, you know, how shall I realize this? And she did send me a recording of a wonderful gospel pianist playing it. So I, you know, I spent quite a few hours just trying to figure out how can I do something similar, because I don't know the gospel style. And what do you say, Ladoris? I think I'm
doing it beautifully.
But I love playing it. You know, once I kind of figured out what I could do, I love playing it. But it did stretch me.
Right. Yeah. We have three vocalists who are singing this.
Yeah. It's a wonderful. It's a wonderful piece. But yeah, that was a stretch. And then some of the other things, like one of the spirituals by Dolores White is kind of in stride piano style, you know, and that's not something we do normally.
I mean, no.
Maybe the end of the Schumann fantasy, right? But yeah, so that I have practiced it and practiced it. It's taken lots of work, and you know, hopefully my accuracy will be okay. But it's a stretch. But I love it. You know, the other thing that's a stretch, literally, is that so much of the writing is very dense. You know, four or five notes in each hand throughout the piece.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I've had to kind of work up my stamina for some of this. But, you know, you do what you have to do, right, when you're a pianist?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight. And we're going to end with the Zenobia Powell Perry Nocturne. This is with Deanne Tucker on the piano. And, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for
wonderful
having us.
To see
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, African-American Composers Initiative concerts are this weekend, 3 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday. Check out their website, aacinitiative.org, for more information here on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. Here is Zenobia Powell Perry Nocturne. Thank you.
Music by Zenobia Powell Perry from the CD of her piano works, Deanne Tucker on the piano. You can hear her music next weekend with the African American Composers Initiative. Their website is aacinitiative.org. I'm Sarah Cahill with you every Sunday evening here at KALW San Francisco Bay Area.